So
Let me introduce. I'll start, and then we'll go, right? So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Lisa Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And I am happy to be able to present Darcy Hirsch, who is our Chief Washington correspondent, one would say. She's our Washington representative for NJHSA and JFNA, she works for. And so she really wanted to have this opportunity to talk with you all, to talk about your programs, what you need, so she knows what to advocate for. I was looking for Joe Hickey, but she's not on here. Joe is your chair of the Food Pantry Professionals Group, but she may not have been able to make it. I wanted to mention her, though. So, Darcy, I'm so glad you're here. Take it away.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's such a pleasure to be here and to be with all of you. Thank you for joining. I'm so excited to hear from you. I'll give you a little bit of an update about what's happening on Capitol Hill, but the goal of this meeting is to really learn from you. I don't know how many of you are familiar with NJHSA's policy priorities. We go through an advocacy policy priority development process every single year. To come up with what are our top asks going to be for Congress and the presidential administration. And this year we really focused on community response to the economic and public health crisis, and food insecurity rose to the top of the level, to the top of the list. So our top three priorities for the year are related to combating food insecurity, to supporting mental health and long-term care. And workforce development and skills building. So the work that you all do has really been prioritized as far as what we are pushing for on Capitol Hill. And there have been, you know, we're in the middle of passing the fourth COVID relief package. The House is actually voting on it today. And you know, as we've been advocating for items in these packages and reporting out to the field about what's in it, what matters to you, I've had a lot of questions about, well, what really does matter to you? So I'd love to give a brief update, but then I would really like to go around and hear about what kind of federal funding programs you and your food pantry participate in, so that I know when I'm meeting with a member of Congress or I'm meeting with the administration, I can say, well, actually, you know, this is how this money gets dispersed and this is how our community uses it or doesn't. I mean, if there's challenges in accessing these funds, I want to know. And after I go through this list, if you're sitting there saying, well, we don't get any of these funds, I want to know that too. So I see that Lisa asked to put your community in your Zoom box. That would be great, since I only know a couple of you. That would be super helpful. I also want to introduce my intern, Isabella Bennett, who is my JFNA intern. She's supporting me in JFNA and NJHSA's work as far as food security. So she's here to listen as well. So I'm going to get started. I'm going to give a brief overview of the American Rescue Plan, what's in it for related to food. And then I'm going to talk about the Farmers to Families Food Box program for a couple of minutes. If Sasha Eskew is with us, I don't see her. I've asked her to give a brief report. And then I want to go around and hear from you all about your thoughts about how I could better advocate on your behalf in my work. So the American Rescue Plan, for those of you not following it, is the second largest COVID relief bill out of the four that have passed since last February. It's a $1.9 trillion legislative package. People are saying it is the most biggest expansion of welfare and social services and support for people in need since Johnson's programs in the 60s. So really, 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 really significant. As far as items that are directly related to either food pantries or the clients you serve, there was a big win as far as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. They have included a 15% boost in the maximum SNAP benefit that will be continued through September 30th. They've also designated $25 million to assist with an online SNAP purchasing program, which really was developed, you know, over the past 9 months throughout the pandemic. So they want to boost the technology to make sure that more folks are able to take advantage of that program. They've continued the pandemic EBT program through September 30th. They've also allocated $37 million to the commodity supplemental food program, which we're going to come back to because I have some questions about that. There's $390 million for improvements to WIC. There is $400 million for the Emergency Food and Shelter Program. So there's going to be an upcoming round of EFSP coming down the pike. And last, not least important, $750 million for Older Americans Act Congregate and Home Delivered Meals Program. So that's the funding that comes down through the Area Agencies on Aging. And they've continued the waiver that was put in effect during the Families First Coronavirus Response Act that makes more folks eligible for home delivered meals. Because of course, it's not a good idea to have a congregate meal program right now until everybody's vaccinated. So that's what's in the package. Does anybody have any questions? I really wanna kind of, we'll go around and I wanna hear from you, but does anybody have any kind of top line questions about what's in the bill that the House is going to pass today? Okay. So before I move into kind of those buckets, I want to talk about the Farmers to Families box. Tracy, did you have a question?
I'm sorry. No, I was interrupted. I'm going to mute myself.
Sorry. Is anybody familiar with the Farmers to Families Food Box Program? Raise your hand, go like this, move around a little bit. Yes, a little bit, okay. All right, so the Farmers to Families Food Box Program this is great, and this is helpful. Also, thank you, Sandy, for your comment in the chat. Your pantry is completely funded by donations. I think that may be the case for many of you, so that's also helpful for me to know. So the farmers, thank you. Maybe I'll send out a follow-up kind of survey, but thank you, Miriam, for that too. So the Farmers to Families Food Box Program was a program that was created. It's a coronavirus response program that was created, I think, last February or March in the first big coronavirus response package that basically designated a lot of money to purchase food from farmers and package it and distribute it to food banks and then to pantries. So it had two goals. One is to take care of the surplus crops that farmers are producing that they weren't able to sell because of COVID, and also to get food out to hungry and needy people. There have been four rounds of the program so far. The first two rounds of the program were produce only. So the boxes that were being put together and bid upon were produce only. And I know that several food banks and pantries were able to participate in the program and it was great. And then in August, they changed everything and decided, first of all, that the boxes had to be 40 pounds and had to go directly into people's trunks. You couldn't open up the box. You couldn't take it apart. So there was a food storage issue as far as the size of the box, but also the box then had to contain produce and dairy and meat products, which is a problem for a kosher food pantry or a food pantry with a kosher section. You can't do anything with that non-kosher meat, but you're also not allowed to take the box apart. And so there have been organizations that have been fighting it starting, you know, last August, but there were no changes in the program for rounds 3 and 4, which went through last fall and December. And so Congress allocated another $1.5 billion to this Farmers to Families Food Box program in the budget package that passed right in between Christmas and New Year's. And now that there's a new presidential administration, they're actually trying to figure out what to do with this money because they know that there was a problem with the way that the former program was being run. So we have actually weighed in. The United Fresh Produce Association has pulled together a work group. We've been giving input. They're going to be recommending that the next round of the program be produce only. which is great and corrects some of the issues with the prior programs. But we'd also like to see it be better. So I would love to hear other ways that your agencies may be able to take advantage of the program if you had not previously been able to do so. There's actually a public comment period. USEA is hosting a public comment period over the next month. So NJHSA is going to be writing a letter, a comment letter. You're also more than welcome to write your own. I can share the link with Lisa, who can share it with you afterwards. But in the meantime, I would love to hear from you about your experience with the program and if there are ways that we can recommend that USDA improve it for the next round. So if anybody wants to offer something up, you can unmute yourself or you raise your hand.
Hi, so my name is Marcy and I run the Kosher Food Pantry in Rhode Island. We are the only kosher food pantry in the entire state of Rhode Island, as well as Southeastern Mass. We are 100% kosher. We actually tried to get the farmers food boxes once when they were just produce. And we were able to get them, but I would say that a good 1/3 of the produce that came in the box were rotten. Therefore, it then proceeded to rot the entire box. I didn't do it again after that. As well as after that, then they started to have meat and cheese in them, which was useless for us. So I didn't do it. But it was awful. It was a horrible, like if all the produce were fine, it would have been great. But there were so many that were rotten that I threw so much out. It was just really gross. Because I think that they probably went to the food bank, sat at the food bank, then got shipped to me. So there were so many ways that it so many times it was manhandled and thrown around that it was just, it was awful. And I really didn't want to do it again.
Okay, thank you for feedback. That. Yeah, that's great feedback. It's funny. It's not funny. But it's actually one other item that the United Fresh Produce Association is recommending is that the contracts not be based on lowest bid. So that was actually part of the issue as well, is that it was lowest bid. So you're not going to get, you know, the best stuff, but it was also state by state. So I heard, you know, in New York, I talked to some food pantries that thought it was great. And I talked to somebody in Pennsylvania who said it was disgusting. And someone in Arkansas and said, all we got is rotten potatoes. So hopefully within the next round, there will be better quality control. Because that's the former round was more about getting the crops off of the farmer's land rather than getting edible, you know, appealing food to people.
Also, Darcy, we did not participate. Hi, this is Beth Inglesos with JFCS in Greater Mercer County, Central New Jersey. That many people, I'm sure all of us see this, clients who do not have cars could not transport 40 pounds worth of anything. So that was a big issue with this program, as well as with some of the other USDA programs.
Lisa.
Yep. I'm Drew Gold. I'm from JFCS of the Greater Philadelphia area. And we were only able to participate in this program briefly for a period of time, but had multiple contacts and attempts to participate. And because of the way we distribute food and our volunteers couldn't even carry the bags to people who then wouldn't be able to pick up the boxes to use the food. We really would have benefited greatly from just cases of X, Y, or Z produce. And I think from a like supply chain end, that also would result in people having less rotten produce because it's one less step of sorting. It felt very restrictive. And honestly, the distributors that we went through, their hands seemed very tied by it as well.
Thank you, Drew. For the size, did you participate in the first and second rounds?
July, August. We were getting produce in July, August.
So even then, okay. Mm-hmm. Anybody else have any experience? Yeah.
So I'm Tiffany. I'm new to SOVA, the Jewish Family Services in LA, but I came from the food bank in the Bay Area. And so we were serving about 500,000 people during the height of the pandemic. We did a lot of those boxes. A lot of our smaller agencies that didn't have the capacity to box loved it. And folks that had drive-through distributions with people that could just put it right into the trunk loved it. And our partners who did home delivery. So we actually had Uber, Lyft, and another company we utilized for home delivery. They loved it. When it came to the smaller pantries with older volunteers, it was very, again, very difficult to lift. Clients had a hard time lifting it if they were not getting it directly loaded into their car. The Trump letter was fun. We ripped all of those out the first round. But again, I would definitely advocate for boxed produce and it be about 25 pounds. And we would love to have some kind of sticker that says when it was packed, so we have an idea. That's great. Thanks, nice to meet you guys.
Thank you. Okay, Erica, I think you're gonna say.
We sort of received everything secondhand. So there was another organization who received it and passed it out, and we got whatever they had left. But I'm curious, why is it that everything has to be boxed and not separated out? I think that was the biggest challenge, is that when we would receive leftovers, we wouldn't be able to pick it up until the next day. And things, because they didn't know what was inside, things either weren't refrigerated or frozen the way that they needed to. So I think that's the one thing that really confuses me, is why is it that it has to be in a sealed box and not opened? Because that would also help with the kosher issue, because families could certainly take things out and share them with neighbors that they weren't, things they couldn't eat.
That's a great question. I have no idea. I don't know if anybody has any insight on that, but I would absolutely circle back with folks that may know. Marcy?
Marcy does.
Something else that kind of brought up, the fact that they were very, very heavy. A lot of my customers are older, single people. They're not going to eat 40 pounds of produce. It's going to spoil. So they were actually opening them up when we put them in their car and taking things out and giving them back to me. I'm not going to eat this. I'm not going to eat this. I'm not going to eat this. So I think if we were to be able to get, you know, bushels of the same thing or bags or crates of, you know, you're going to get, you know, 400 pounds of cabbage and you're going to get 400 pounds of potatoes, are better than these miscellaneous boxed items, because then I can put them out for choice and people can take what they want and you know, I can give them a limit. So it's not all then going to waste or being thrown out, or people get it home and they look at it and they're like, I don't want half of this.
Right. I've heard about people leaving things on the parking lot, on the ground in the parking lot.
Exactly.
I have something to add. We're in Stamford, Connecticut at the Jewish Family Service Friedberg Family Kosher Food Pantry. And we did get the boxes a number of times, but it was for all of the reasons that everybody has said, we actually unboxed and sorted the food because we're a small pantry. We have a very, very mixed crowd of walk-ins. And in some cases, for those who had cars, we were able to hand them the whole box and never deal with it. But after pantry hours, if the food wasn't gone, we sorted, we redistributed the foods. And it was, in our case, a good source for walk-in clientele, because you don't often see big cheese blocks like that. And there was, you know, there was some very good material that we could use and get rid of quickly, but we did have to store it separately, had a volunteer come in who specialized in this for us on those days, and we made the best use of it that we could. But definitely the boxes are huge, and without that extra volunteer and those resources, it would be challenging.
Thank you. Anybody else about the farmers food box program?
This is Matthew Bolton from Pittsburgh, and we've gotten an other variety of it, and not the one with the cheese and milk, but I can share with you that what I've seen with some of the pantries in the Jewish community, a lot of the Jewish pantries are open 5 days a week, and it makes it more challenging when you get a whole pallet. And so if there is a possibility of utilizing this program in a way in which you could subcontract with a local vendor versus it coming from a large farm, that would allow for an easier distribution. Because one of the challenges with us is that we're not getting 500 families once a month. We're getting 500 families across 5 days a week, across a whole month instead of one day. And so operationally, logistically, it can be challenging.
That makes sense.
Also, I don't know if you have information. I heard that in some larger Jewish communities, which is not us, that they were able to get kosher food, like that they got kosher dairy products or kosher, maybe kosher meat or something, that they were able to sign up for different things when like the majority of the area it was serving was kosher. I don't know details of that, but I was hearing from people who were getting food boxes that had kosher items in it.
In other communities?
Yeah, I know that in Bergen County, I was here. I just know people there who were saying they were getting these boxes of food.
Yeah, I think, I'm just writing that down. I think it because it depended on the state-by-state regulations that it wasn't uniform as to whether they would include a kind of a religious option.
Okay, and the other question also is we did not sign up for it and we were a little late to that. And we at some point kind of wanted to see if we could get on and we had a hard time finding information. So I guess as the information about the next round comes out, it would be helpful, you know, if you can communicate with us about what we need to do when.
Okay, that's good. No, yes. Okay, any other comments on the food box? Okay, this is incredibly helpful. As I said, I'll be submitting a comment on behalf of the network. And if you, you know, think of anything in the meantime, you can let me know. I think it's, I'll be sending it in a few weeks. Okay, so now I kind of want to go through a couple of the other programs specifically designated for food banks and food pantries because I want to find out about how you utilize these funds or not. So the not the one that just passed the House today, but all of the other COVID response packages included increased funds for TFAP, for the Emergency Food Assistance Program. Can you tell me how and if you access these funds? If this is a program anybody's participating in?
We receive, our pantry receives USDA food. We work with our with the St. Louis Area Food Bank, and we receive monthly food, TFAP, USDA, for our guests who qualify.
Right, and do you pick out that, how does that work? Because I know I know in New York, I mean, they give you certain options to choose from, they may or may not be kosher.
So we don't get any options. We have a kosher section at our pantry, but we aren't fully kosher. We are actually given a list each month of the items that we will be receiving. We've just recently learned that we are able to turn some of those items down if we don't want them. But we aren't able to pick and choose ourselves unless we're saying, no, we don't want that.
Would you say it's a helpful program?
Absolutely. For the amount of food we give our guests, we're able to give each family 10 days worth of food per individual in the family.
Wow. Oh. Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Marcy.
We use the TFAP program also. The majority of my clients are eligible for it. And we get items through the Rhode Island Food Bank and we get to pick and choose what we want, which makes it really nice because I can make sure that they're kosher items. Often I have to go back and forth with the staff at the food bank to make sure. But once we figured out what is and what's not, it makes it really easy. And it really helps my bottom dollar so that I am not spending so much of my own budget on items.
Thank you. Who else? Anybody else?
We do TFAP and USDA from the LA Regional Food Bank. Coming from another food bank, their TFAP boxes are a little sad. The dry goods are, you know, not great. And then the USDA selection, everything's canned. I haven't seen any fresh USDA items available for order. For us, we have such a large food drive residual. We have so much food drive from residual things that we don't really need the canned stuff. And a lot of the stuff that's going into those TFAT boxes, we find, I don't know how many garbanzo beans I see out in the parking lot. So I think that it just, you know, really thinking about the items that they're putting in those boxes is really important.
Does anybody have any insight? This is fairly new to me. How about how is the determination made as to what is put, what the options are going to be?
So I don't know when pantries have a choice, but my understanding here is in St. Louis is that there's the allotted funds to the state of Missouri, and then depending on your census and how many people are living at or below the poverty line, a certain percentage is given, a certain percentage of food is given to the St. Louis Area Food Bank, and then they split it up between their partners depending on the size of the pantry, how many people you serve, and I think a couple other factors.
Thank you. And then they purchase whatever is least expensive from the distributor. Okay, does anybody else have experience with TFAP? For those of you that don't participate in TFAP, I would love some insight as to why are there hurdles? Is it not available to you? Do you not know about it? I'd love some feedback on that. Beth?
We have the challenge that most of the food that comes in through that is not kosher through our local food bank. So we really have not taken advantage of it at all. Once in a while, I'll get a call because I know the person who runs it and we'll say, oh, you know, do you want to come pick up, you know, 20 cases of kosher tuna and we'll run over. But most of the times it's not kosher.
Okay, thank you, Beth. I've heard that from other communities as well. Okay. So I now want to ask you about a program that I don't know anything about. It's called the Commodity Supplemental Food Program. Some folks I've heard it called the Senior Box. I would love to hear from those of you that participate in it, how it works, how it doesn't work.
We do that program as well. I guess I should introduce myself because I think this is really my first full meeting. My name is Erica Steen. I work, I'm the director of the Harvey Kornblum Jewish Food Pantry in St. Louis. We're a program of Jewish Family Services here. So we do the CSFP boxes. The biggest challenge with those boxes is they keep adding to them. And I don't think they're thinking about the fact that it's senior adults that the boxes are going to. Similar to something that someone else was saying prior to the pandemic, we used to give them out at one of our local senior centers, and you know, people would have to fill out the application, but they would literally open the boxes in the room we were passing them out and either transfer everything to their little granny carts or leave things behind that they had no interest in. Those boxes are getting to the point where they're heavy for our young staff to lift. And so I think that's the biggest challenge with them, at least for us, is that the boxes are getting bigger and getting heavier. And it's great for the seniors to have more product, but they're just not realistically, they're big and they're heavy. It's a challenge.
Is there a variety of food in the box or is it kind of?
I don't want to say there's not a variety, but you know, two of the items are usually bottles of juice. I think that the items are somewhat helpful because we give out close to 300 a month. So, and we've got a waiting list. So people are wanting them. You know, they're basic staples. Canned fruits and vegetables, juice, pasta, cereal.
What is the eligibility? Is it an income level?
It's, I believe it's income and age.
Does anybody else have experience with this program they'd like to share?
Yeah, my name is Matthew Bolton with Pittsburgh, the Squirrel Hill Food Pantry, part of JFCS. We've participated in the CSFP program, and then I want to say that right before COVID, the Greater Pittsburgh Food Bank that we're a member agency of started to do direct distributions of CSFP to some of the senior high rises. And so our participation dropped pretty fast. And then we only had maybe three or four clients participating in it. And once COVID started, the clients did not want to take them because we were getting some of the large produce boxes. And so it was a little too much. We serve a lot of the former Soviet Union resettled Jews, and they don't like a lot of the food in the boxes. So they would open the box and probably only take about three or four items out of the boxes. This is not really an advocacy thing, but just to share with the larger group, when you participate in the CSFP, it does bring with it further auditing by your state Department of Agriculture. So that's something just to think about, because, you know, when you have government commodities, you will have the surprise surveillance by the USDA. And then when you do the CSFP, you will also have the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. Another thing that I don't know if it's national or if it's local to our food bank is the logistics involved in ordering it. So they have a sticker on it that says each month, and we're not allowed to order until that month begins. But if our order date, let's say, is the 31st, that we have to place the order and we get it the second week, there's this odd timing where we may not get that month's CSFP until the end of the month. And then the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture that audits us does not like seeing last month's boxes not being distributed. So there is a challenge to distribute it and also to receive it. And I think some of that just has to do with old bureaucratic bylaws in regards to how we're told to order things.
Thank you, Matthew. Does anybody else want to comment on this program? Interesting. One thing that the Biden administration is very focused on is kind of streamlining applications for programs. So whether it's streamlining signing your clients up for SNAP and Social Security, disability, et cetera, all in one form, or easing burdens like this for providers, I would think that this would be important feedback for them to have. Certainly, there's a lot of hoops to jump through on a lot of levels, but I'm sure they would be open to recommendations. All right, kind of thinking about other programs. So the Emergency Food and Shelter Program has gotten a significant boost in the package that just passed minutes ago. Does anybody want to share any experience participating in that program?
I, Rebecca from Jewish Family Services, Lehigh Valley. So we were very fortunate between the EFSP Phase 37 and then the EFSP CARES this year to get a nice chunk of money. We had a portion of it specifically for rent, and then we had a portion for the food pantry. I can't remember the total amount. The nice thing is we were able to, we spend almost $2,000 a month of EFSP money to supplement the food pantry. The issue is it is very specific what you can or cannot spend the money on. So it has to be food items. It can be boxes and bags as well for the food pantry, but not the tape to put the boxes together. And you can use it for feminine hygiene products and diapers, but not wipes. So, you know, and you have to really keep your spreadsheets in a, they're very specific on the spreadsheets. You can only use the company credit card or cash and have those receipts. So you really have to manage it. But it's been, you know, a huge boost. I will say $2,000 a month sounds great. It's been a lot of work to spend that mindfully and carefully, but it's definitely money worth going after if you have enough people to really manage it well.
Thank you. I'm going to remember the tape story. Okay, thank you. That's very similar to the other comments I've heard about the program. I know that NJHSA has been announcing whenever those funding opportunities are available as far as EFSP. So, you know, once they figure out what the timing is on the $40 million that just went through today, we'll let you know. But of course, be in touch with your local board about how to apply for those funds. I think that's it as far as kind of the specific programs I wanted to ask about. I would love to hear from you about other, if there's other programs you participate in, if there's other issues that you think would be helpful for me to know about. And honestly, I hope that this has been a helpful conversation for you all to hear from your colleagues about things you're doing or not doing. So we could also take this opportunity if somebody had a question about something someone else said, you know, we could do that too.
Marcy, yeah. There's a question here, which in the chat, whether a federation would be able to receive food through government programs, or do you need to be a pantry?
No, it was if JFCS can receive food through a government program, or are we talking that the pantries are the only ones that are able to get these government programs?
I think it's the pantries that are these specific,
just the pantries?
Yeah, the programs that I just listed. But if it's something, Lisa, if you're doing, I don't know if you're providing Older Americans Act, like Meals on Wheels or congregate programs.
Mm-hmm.
But the specific ones I listed are for food pantries.
Okay, thanks. I was just curious.
Yeah.
Who can we, is there, for those of us who might be newer to this group and everything, is there anyone who we could talk to that kind of catch up on grants we may not have known about and, you know, and things like that if we haven't gotten the emails before?
Are you talking about through the network?
Yeah, through anywhere, but, you know, to just find out if there are things that are open now, anything like that.
For food specifically.
For food. Yeah.
Maybe we can find some time.
Okay, separately. That would be great.
Okay. And I may be able to connect you with some other folks as well.
Okay, thanks.
I had a question in regards to advocacy for federal commodities for kosher meats, frozen meats. And so I know that came up earlier in regards to the boxed foods, but just this is an ongoing challenge just in general that food banks, you know, a lot of the pantries, including a lot of the kosher pantries, receive a large amount of food from local food banks, and the food banks get part of their money from the state and then part of their money from the federal government, including those government commodities. And is there a way that this group or at the federal level, we can do some sort of advocacy to push for kosher meat protein as government commodities to be available at food banks that we can then order? Because that's a major challenge, and it's not as easy as a truck delivering my little pantry, you know, 10 pallets of frozen kosher meat, because I can't take that in all at once. So it would have to go through the food banking system, unless they would like to give me cash and I would just send it to the local Murray Avenue Kosher and let them buy it and send it to me?
That's a really good question. I'm happy to look into it. It reminds me, I mean, it's more expensive, right? So that's going to be the first, kind of the first challenge. But we advocated with the Older Americans Act was reauthorized last year. And we advocated for additional funding to be included to take into account dietary restrictions, whether religious or otherwise. And they actually included religious meals as a category. So now the government acknowledges religious meals, but they didn't allocate any additional funding for it, which will be the next step. But that's definitely something I will look into.
And just for your knowledge, there was a bill on both the Senate and the representative and the House of Reps side by a federal rep and a federal senator in New York State that did try to push for kosher and halal USDA commodities, but it never went anywhere and there was no real push for it. So, I mean, if there's anything we can do, I'm sure a lot of people on this call would be very, very proactive in pushing for it. And I think the food banks that we work with would be a little bit of a pain for them to have to carve out some cold storage. But I think that it could be done and it could be very easily put into day-to-day, year-to-year logistics.
Okay, I'd love to learn more about that bill if you have any information about it. I just put my email in the chat if you want to send it to me. And honestly, if anybody has anything they'd like to email me directly, I'm happy to talk separately.
And this is Rebecca from Jewish Family Service. I work with Tracy and we're in Stamford, Connecticut. And it's as if you were reading our mind. That is exactly what we're dealing with right now, especially as we prepare and anticipate for the holidays. We can get plenty of non-kosher meat. And our Connecticut Food Bank just put us through a civil rights training. And one of the problems that we're having is that they are not considering our need for kosher meat a violation of anyone's civil rights. I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying we went to them and we said, we just had this training with you and you talked about civil rights, but when we've asked you to connect with kosher distributors and manufacturers, you said you cannot. They wouldn't go into it. We tried to take it as far up to the top as we could, but it didn't work out. And so, I don't know, Tracy, because you were just there, you could speak more on our experience, but they didn't consider this any kind of civil rights issue. And I'm not saying I wanted to be that much of a rabble rouser, but it kind of is.
Go ahead, Marcy.
Sorry. I just kind of wanted to chime in that, I'm not able to obtain any kosher protein basically from our local food bank. They often don't even have kosher tuna. I have to buy all of that out of my budget, which is very small. So, I buy kosher chicken and tuna, and really like that's my entire budget for the month is spent, and I can't supplement on other items that I know that would be beneficial for my customers because it's all going to protein.
Yeah, but this is a really important need, really big need for us because we have a demand for it. And actually, I wanted to take the opportunity to introduce Leah Schechter, who's new to our organization and on the call. She's our chief program officer, and Leah has a lot of experience with food distribution. And Leah, I thought maybe you would want to comment on that issue regarding the food pantry and the resources that we are not having access to.
So I will just say that, hi everybody. It's really exciting to be on this call. And Lisa, it is so nice to see you. Lisa and I used to work together in a previous life too. I'm also coming from Met Council, which is one of the largest free kosher food providers in the country that works in the five boroughs of New York. And I spent most of my time, I've only been back here at JFS for a couple of weeks now, but I spent most of my time during the pandemic working with Met Council. And so to come here and to hear that the food banks are asking us not to discriminate, not to discriminate against clients, but then there is a discrimination against the agency as a kosher pantry. You know, and I've heard both Rebecca and Tracy say, we've tried to bring this up and we've tried to bring it up and we're not making headway at the pantry. So I've now taken it on as one of my missions. And one of the questions that I asked was, you know, what are the halal pantries that the Food Bank of Connecticut is also serving? And I think one of the things we saw at Met Council, especially during the pandemic, where we were a Jewish kosher focused food distribution program. And pre the pandemic, we had one neighborhood that was in Brighton Beach, New York, near Coney Island, which was serving a very large Jewish kosher population. They also opened their pantry a second day to serve the Islamic community who needed halal food. And during the pandemic, literally Met Council grew an entire other group of people who needed culturally competent food professionals to be helping them access the food that we needed. So at least from my perspective, any sort of networking that we can do between communities who have specific dietary requirements. I also asked them about any medical organizations that were doing medically necessary meals. And the Food Bank of Connecticut brought up that they were doing work with HIV patients at one particular hospital pantry. And they were also doing work with a pantry that specifically was dealing with diabetic patients. So at least for me, that's sort of my, here in Connecticut, I'm going to hopefully reach out to those niche pantries that like a Jewish pantry, like a kosher pantry, have a very specific dietary requirement to make sure that whether it's religion or it's medically necessary, these are requirements and people have the right to be able to access food that they can eat and maintain and sustain healthy lives. So any of those other connections, I'd be more than happy to throw my hat in the ring to help sort of bring us together or if a forum can be started where those groups come together, because I think there's always power in numbers.
And Darcy, another thing, a couple of years ago, I had worked with the Orthodox Union, had a committee who were trying to get kosher food out to kosher pantries. So that might be another opportunity if, you know, anybody wants to reach out again, or I'd be happy to.
Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Leah. Absolutely. We need to do this work in coalition, whether it's on the local level or the national level. And so you've all given me some great ideas. I just want to mention, I will be reaching out to the OU. Maybe Beth, I'll circle back with you individually to hear about your local contacts. I've been in touch with national Muslim advocacy organizations. As I mentioned, we're in touch with the United Fresh Produce Association. I think there's a lot we can do here, and there's a lot of commonality with those groups, specifically the Muslim group and the OU, obviously, to maybe help move something forward. So I've learned a lot during this call. I'm absolutely going to look at the kosher meat issue in addition to all of the other federal programs that we had previously discussed. So I just want to thank you all for your candor, for your sharing. This has been really worthwhile for me, and I'm going to process it all and see how I can share this in a productive way to advocate for better programs and better support for the great work that you're doing. So I will now turn it over to Lisa.
Lisa, can I ask real quick, can you get a screen capture of all of this and put just a little blurb of what this was so that all of us can kind of share if we'd like to on our social media? Because this is an important call and we're all trying to ensure that we're taking care of our communities.
Yes, I can. So I just did that and lost what I was going to tell everybody.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. So here we are. I want to thank Darcy so much. And clearly this was important, as Matthew just said. And if you all want to share it on your social medias, that'd be good. Maybe we should come up with a hashtag. I don't know what it would be, but think of something before the end. I want to share with everyone that we have a co-chair. We have, remember I said Joe Hickey was our chair. I forgot that we have another chair, a co-chair, Beth Anglisos from Central New Jersey, who you guys have seen and know, and she's so great and been such a instrumental part of the Food Pantry Professionals Affinity Group. So I want to welcome you. Thank you for taking on that role, stepping up.
Thank you.
That's great. I also want to say that mark your calendars on March 23rd at 2 p.m. We're having Diversified Foods coming to talk. We're having a pop-up. Diversified Foods is the proud provider of shelf-stable milk since 1989 and offers nationwide distribution to pantries, food banks, and schools. They're going to come and talk with us about the shelf-stable milk, 12 months of shelf life, unopened, 100% grade milk. Anyway, she's got great deals. It's unrefrigerated. Once refrigerated, it doesn't have to remain refrigerated. It can be unopened to go from pantry to refrigerator and back to pantry with no effects on taste or quality. So come and listen to Sue talk about Diversified Foods and what she can offer to your pantries at a very discounted price. So I'll send an invitation, but I wanted to just say that to you all. And I want to thank you all for being here. Did we come up with a hashtag? Anyone? I don't have hashtags. Matthew, do you? Hashtag food pantry? Okay. Okay. Well, you'll just share it to your social media. And thank you all for being on here. I guess that's it. And welcome, Leah, if you're still here.
Lisa, how about hashtag no one hungry?
Hashtag no one hungry.
Nice.
I like that. Okay. Thank you, Sandy. Bye.
Thank you, Lisa.
Okay. See everyone soon.
Nice meeting.